You are listening to Fees Always Wins, a financial podcast.
What's a rip?
A rip, commission. That's why we work here.
We make huge rips.
No, I still don't know how it works.
But you and me, the brokers, we're taking home cold hard cash via commission.
Right.
No matter whether our clients make money or lose money, Duke and Duke get the commissions.
The only thing we don't know is your fee.
My fee is the free market. Your part.
Yeah. Rest in peace, Jack Bogle. I feel like it was just yesterday I found out I was a bogglehead. Sunday, January 20th, and the government has been shut down for 29 days. The market has rallied for 2 weeks in a row, and we remember Jack Bogle of Vanguard, who passed at 89 years young. I am Chris. This week, the scion of the Delta, co-host of Fees Always Win, will not be joining us, but he will return next week. This is Fees Always Win, a weekly financial podcast hosted by two friends who are learning the strategy and measurements to make us better investors. You can find us on Facebook, iTunes, and probably every other place where you get your podcasts. Please leave a rating on our iTunes page and write a review. If it's 5 stars, we will read it on air. If you would like to support the show, you could sign up for a Robinhood account by following one of the two links in the show notes. Join Robinhood and you and one of the hosts will get a stock like Apple, Ford, or Sprint for free. This episode, we're going to discuss some additional chapters of Bogglehead, The Guide to Investing, the legacy of the book's inspiration, Jack Bogle, or Bogle, and bankruptcies, investor rights, and we review the week 8 performance of our stock picks. But first, Jack Bogle.
We have some very sad news to share with you tonight. John Bogle, the founder of Vanguard, has passed away at the age of 89. He was a frequent guest on CNBC. Tyler Matheson has a look back at Bogle's incredible career that helped shape the investment industry.
Indexing always works best, up, down, or sideways.
In 1975, Jack Bogle started the Vanguard Group, and with it, a new way of investing.
Jack was the creator, effectively, of the index funds.
Index funds, mutual funds whose portfolios match a market barometer like the S&P 500, are commonplace today. But they were unheard of in the 1970s, much less the early 1950s, when Bogle wrote his senior thesis about the concept at Princeton.
I said mutual funds should be operated in the most honest, efficient, and economical way possible. I had a sentence in my thesis that said mutual funds can make no claim to superiority over the market averages.
Bogle's thesis research laid the groundwork for what would become one of the most powerful investing movements of the late 20th century. He concluded that active trading mutual fund managers failed as a group to outperform the relevant indexes, especially when you subtract fees and expenses.
Anybody can do it for a year, and a few can do it for 5 years, and a few can do it for 10 years. But over an investment lifetime, there's about a 3% chance a money manager can beat the market.
After Princeton, Bogle went to work for Wellington Management for over 2 decades, eventually becoming CEO. He was later terminated for what he called an unwise merger. So he started over, putting the indexing concepts from his thesis into practice at Vanguard.
Investors suddenly found the playing field more level. So to a certain extent, in fact, to a great extent, I would say, he democratized investing for individuals, which was a huge contribution in the mutual fund space.
That initial fund, called the First Index Investment Trust and later renamed the Vanguard 500 Index, tracked the S&P 500. Skeptics ridiculed it as Bogle's folly. But by 1990, index investing had taken root. The reason? Bogle turned out to be right. In the 15 years ending in January 2017, 9 out of 10 actively managed large-cap mutual funds underperform Vanguard's 500 index. Today, Vanguard has more than $5 trillion under management.
When we first started the show, the basis or the concept came out of a letter to the shareholders that was written by behemoth Warren Buffett. Now, Warren Buffett is worth in the multi-billions of dollars for his contribution as well as the management of his portfolio, which includes such companies as Geico Insurance, Coca-Cola, Berkshire Hathaway, actual investments, as well as their real estate portfolio and insurance companies. Jack Bogle could have done a similar thing, because in that letter was a reflection of Jack's thesis at Princeton that he wrote many years prior. To think that those same things, Jack Bogle with the mutual fund or the fund management in the trillions, could have been a multi-billionaire, chose to take a small percentage of his returns to reinforce what his investment theory is. And that's to be appreciated. We discussed the first couple of chapters last week, and I did end up sending a copy to Ello, and we'll follow up with chapter 5 and 6 next week. But in chapter 3, he does go over the difference with mutual funds as well as bonds, and what are the difference, what are the advantages, the disadvantages, and the opportunities for an everyday investor, and as well as the main tip of read the prospectus, that all of these funds and things you invest in, whether they're at work or part of your personal portfolio, have a prospectus, which he identifies the single best way to find out about the objectives, costs, past performance figures, and other important information about the mutual fund you're considering investing in. Pull that information. Normally, when there's open enrollment for your organization or company, you don't have to make that decision immediately. You have a time frame. Print them up, bring them home and read them, or download them and read them if you have a laptop at work. It's important to your future, and not just at the organization, because if you're more financially comfortable due to taking an extra couple of hours to consider the information and what you're investing in, that peace of mind is going to translate into you being a better employee at your job or career. In chapter 4, it goes into essentials of successful investing and more, and not just focusing on funds, but actually theory. And so take this opportunity. If you haven't gotten a chance to order the book yet, please order. Chapter 5 goes into bond fixed rate history as well as treasury bills, which we went into as well, and I can't wait to discuss it in more detail with the Scion. But take this opportunity. Once again, this is the book Bogleheads Guide to Investing, written by Taylor Larimore, Mel Lindauer, and Michael LaBeouf. And the foreword actually has John C. Bogle. They have hard copies, paperback copies, first, second editions. Doesn't matter which one you get. They're basically the same thing. Please take that opportunity. But let's get into some stocks and how they're performing. The S&P 500 continues to grow. It's now down only 3% from our start 8 weeks ago. Finished the week at 2,670, down 3.24%. The Fees Always Win Index is actually up 1.9%. So us taking that consideration, as indicated in that audio that we pulled directly from CNBC, and it's about a 10-minute segment. I'll put the link at the rest of the show. You could listen to it more to get an understanding of his impact to the industry. But us in this eight-week window does not reflect the overall market, and that index funds could do a lot of the things that we're doing if we read the prospectus and understand what those are. Because your index funds could be diversified and identified by how aggressive you want it to be. And chapter 2, Bogle indicates, as the closer you get to retirement, the more you want your investments to be held in bonds and mutual funds instead of actual market and stocks and shares. Because if you're retiring tomorrow and you're worried about the market crashing, that's an uncomfortable feeling. It's safer to be in bonds, though you're not going to get a 20% return on a bond. You know you're going to have security of getting a couple of points. Other good ways as well, as saving percentages haven't gone up much, there's many online banks and offline banks that are offering great interest on your checking account. Take that opportunity, just like your organization who matches a portion of your 401k, max that out. That's free money just sitting right there. So while 3% isn't 20%, once again, and some hot stock, it's more than the average rate of inflation. So that means you're protecting your money from inflation, you're making money, or you're staying with the value that your money has when you invested it. My first stock is Salesforce, stock symbol CRM, up 6.78% for this 8-week period, finished at $152.51. They did announce this week that they've opened a location in Dublin where they're going to be hiring hundreds of more employees. An advantage of that indicates that, one, they're expanding to the European market, which is always going to be beneficial, as the UK has the disadvantage of an unsure Brexit and the structure of it. Dublin is not part of that Brexit exit, so didn't mean for that to rhyme. But the Irish have one of the consistent growing economies in the world. And that's where a lot of businesses are moving to that used to be in London. They could stay in the general geographic area of that island and just move north to Ireland to get a lot of those opportunities. So look forward to that. They're building a new tower. It's going to add jobs. That means they're going to add opportunities. We talked about a couple weeks ago that they set a very aggressive 5-year goal of almost tripling their business. This is how you're going to do it. You're going to have to expand to new markets as well as increasing the market that you have in the U.S. The next stock is Ollie's Bargain Basement Outlet, stock symbol OLLI, finishing the week at $75.68. It's down 14.68%. This is why you have a diversity in your stocks. If you believe in a company, you consistently hold it. This is not the time to sell. If you have confidence in what their growth plan is, what debt they're holding, as well as the CEO's vision. It's down 14, but once again, the fees always win. Index is up 1.90. So you could still have a stock that's down that much and still be making a profit overall with your portfolio, as long as you remain diversified. My next stock was Nike, stock symbol NKE, up 7.38%. They're continuing to grow. One of the interesting things that's coming up is there's likely to be a merger later on this year. It's not going to involve Nike, but it will involve a competitor. I say competitor reluctantly because I never thought of buying Skechers, but I bring my son to the shoe store and those shoes stand out. They use neon colors. They're not his Nikes that he's wore that I've always bought him, the same gray ones. They finally went up to where they no longer had Velcro. I prefer them to have Velcro so I don't have to continuously tie them, but that's an opportunity. Skechers is a buyout target. The first company that people are estimating is VF Corporation. They own other companies such as Vans, Timberland, and North Face. So Skechers probably doesn't have the opportunity to vertically integrate with those other brands. They're completely different, but it would provide them the opportunity of just the entry into the sports market. Skechers is at every clearance outlet has a Skechers. They sell them at almost every shoe store, though it won't be a huge selection. They are there and they stand out. If they stand out the kids, it doesn't matter what adults think. If there's 12 other kids in a daycare, like my son, who chooses them because of the color. He doesn't care about the comfort or the fit or the history behind the company. He has 4 years of history on this earth. That's the history he cares about, and that's his world. And so bright colors got him. It's going to get him over. So they expect Skechers trades just north of 25. They estimate that whoever comes in and buys Skechers is probably going to have a bid above 30. So it's an immediate advantage to a company. The article that I was referencing in Investor's Place, written by Luke Longo, indicates that it looks like it's going to be above $40 per share, whoever invests in them. They don't think it's going to be VF, but Adidas, Under Armour, Nike are the big players in that sector. And as we discussed, one of the big factors that identifies or correlates well with growth is market share and overall market cap. And Skechers, with a low market cap and a low market share, has one of the biggest opportunities to grow, to where if they even take 1% of Nike's market share, that's almost adding a quarter of the market share that Skechers has right now. So consider that when you're investing in this sector outside of Nike, but I'm happy with my Nike investment. One for Comcast would be another one of Elo's. Stock symbol CMCSA, down 6.89 in the 8-week period, finishing at 36.21. Comcast this week had a big announcement. They're also the owners of Universal and NBC, so they've had a lot of changes. NBC Universal announces streaming services that will be free to paid TV subscribers. So you think of CNBC or just NBC or their online offerings. Also consider Netflix and how much they paid for The Office, because that is one of their most watched shows in history, is an NBC vehicle. So with them offering a streaming service, they're probably going to ask for The Office back because they know that's where subscribers are coming from. But that's going to be an opportunity for them to make a lot of money. One of the interesting things is when they announced that, less than 5 hours later, Netflix had two announcements. One was they're raising prices by 13 to 18%, its biggest increase ever. That initial price increase will be to brand new customers who sign up after this week. Existing customers will see that increase, but with the rolling out of NBC, Disney's going to have their app, and Disney has ESPN, it has Marvel, it has Star Wars, who makes Star Wars? Lucasfilm, even though Lucas isn't part, George Lucas is no longer part of it. That's going to be huge as well. So customers still have a finite amount that they could spend each month. I think Netflix is taking the opportunity now to say, let's get the money that we can. One, we're giving the customers a lot of content, a lot of original content. It's costing us $1 billion a year. But if a family has $50 to spend on this content, we could remain at our same price and let a customer get five other competitors. But then if they have to make a decision, they might cut us out. Or let them get four, and we become such an important part of their life because of the content we're producing that we have the ability for price controls. And let's raise it now, because if they need to, they could always cut it. It's the works the same as the interest rate that the Fed sets. If the market goes kaput, they need interest rates to go up now so that they could cut it later. But if it's already at a zero, there is no room for cutting, and that's how a government can go into an actual deep recession or depression. The next one that we're going to go over is going to be Dollar Tree. Finished the week up at 9.09 at 94.66. This stock just keeps growing as the market, there's almost a million people that are furloughed or not getting paid right now. There's almost a million people that are furloughed, working without pay or not working at all and still not getting paid, that have government jobs or are government contractors. And to those listeners and the families that are affected by this, we are sorry to hear. Please let us know what we could do. We're not a corporately sponsored show, but if there's anything we could do, I'll be happy to assist in any way, even if that's buying a meal for a family in need. Dollar Tree continues to go up. Dollar General is talking about expansion with Starboard, the activist investor group trying to get Dollar Tree to sell Family Dollar, that's still providing energy to the stock. I'm hoping they sell it, even if they don't give Starboard that much access to the board to make the decision for them. They're never going to get that money back they originally invested, but dead money doesn't make any new money. So it's just something to think about on that one. Something to think about is this company makes money. The Dollar Tree has generated positive same-store sales growth for 43 consecutive quarters. That means you look back over all the prior 42 quarters, each quarter they've made more out of the same stores that have been around for those 43 quarters. Not many companies have that profile, and that's something to be appreciated. And as an investor, what more can you really want?
To six consecutive quarters in the black.
Next one is Intel. Intel is almost back even for this 8-week period. They've had big news releasing this week as 5G networks are starting to get established. They did get part of the contract with Apple for the modem for the 5G network, and where they're looking to grow is really investing in the infrastructure. Intel has positive gains as a result of a chip maker, while AMD is focusing on primarily computing and are getting into the new PlayStations. Intel is going to look to build this infrastructure for the communications going forward, are primarily audio communication, not just the visual chip, on how data is transferred in terms of mobile communication. That's positive to look at. There's more buy ratings than sell ratings and a lot of hold ratings, so something to look forward to. My next one would be PayPal, up 6.19%, finishing the week at 91.12. And LO's final one is O'Reilly Automotive, up 1.36%. to $351. This is a stock where if they split, they would probably be up 10% for this week period, but they like the stability of the rate they have there. One thing I was looking at, Fintel. These are just some ratios at the company, and we've often talked about what P&E is, but we know that's artificially inflated since companies have more tax revenue than they are. They're paying less taxes this year than they ever have due to the tax changes set by the legislature. Management effectiveness measurement, so return on invested capital, ROIC, is 0.31. Return on assets is 0.16. Return on equity is 0.70. 70%. You're looking for stability in a portfolio. O'Reilly is it. Yes, 1% is that's what it amounts to, but it's a stability stock. When it's at 346 to buy just 8 weeks ago, and now it's at 351, it's gone up. When it's gone, it's performed better than the S&P 500. And you're thinking Nation Auto just indicated that their sales came in lower. Ford is indicating lower sales. GM is indicating lower sales, meaning people aren't buying new vehicles at the same pace they were just a year ago. And if AutoNation is down on trade-ins and sales, then that means people are maintaining their existing vehicles for longer. And if that's the case on average, that means that they're going to try to maintain it themselves, which is good for companies like O'Reilly. So I'm looking forward to investing in them. I do have them part of my portfolio. They were one of Elo's picks, but it's something I would have never considered on my own, as my industrial forays usually don't end well. I look at the wrong ratio. I take the wrong assumptions when I go into that. One example would be Illinois Tool Workers in my last set. But now that I'm a heavy investor in companies that are not heavily leveraged with debt, this is a stalwart in that category. So the Fees Always Win Index up 1.90. The S&P 500 is much better, but it's still down overall 3% for the year. The E Index is up 2%, performing better than the S&P 500, so it's only down 2.11%. The C Index is up 7.28%. I'm actually impressed with myself. I'm patting myself on the back a little for that, but no worries. Let's get into some stories for the second part of the show.
You don't see too many folks anywhere in the world that manage that much money.
After retiring from Vanguard in 1999, Bogle started a research center on the Vanguard campus. There, he continued advocating for indexing and buy and hold long-term investing. He called trading stocks a loser's game.
It comes right out of Shakespeare. These moves in the market are like a tale told by an idiot, full of sound and fury, signifying nothing. I think it's speculators speculating on what other speculators are speculating on.
And speaking of speculation, few would have bet on Vanguard back in 1975. Even fewer still would have thought Bogle would still be jousting with critics deep into the second decade of the 21st century. He had his first heart attack at age 31. Doctors said he wouldn't make it to 40, much less live to 89. He had five more heart attacks before undergoing a heart transplant at the age of 65.
Well, I may be. I don't want to get carried away here. The luckiest guy in the world.
Jack Bogle dead at the age of 89.
The opinions expressed on the show do not reflect the thoughts of our respective employers, family, or podcast network. We are not licensed by the FTC or SEC. Before acting on information on the website or from the show, you should consider whether it's suitable for your particular circumstance and seek advice from your own financial or investment advisor.